Thank you for attending session 211 titled Mormon Genome Project and Critique of Sexual Polyandry Apologetics. Before we begin, we ask that cell phones are turned off. Okay, good. I don't have my phone. We're good. Let's see. Please make sure that cell phones are turned off and that those attending will be respectful and... Oh, wait. This is a script? Okay, this is weird. Okay. The Mormon Genome Project was founded to test for Joseph Smith's progeny through DNA analysis. Specifically, Mormon Genome Project is testing descendants of Josephine Rosetta Lyon to prove whether she was Joseph Smith's biological daughter. This presentation includes an analysis and critique of apologetics relating to Smith's relationship with the Lyon family. Scott Rowley is our presenter today. He is a family law attorney from Mesa, Arizona. He is among the principal founders of Any Opposed and Infants on Thrones, and the principal founder of Mormon Genome Project. So I assume we'll just let Scott take whatever time he needs, and then he will open it up for questions. During that time, the microphone for questions is right here at the front of the auditorium. If you need me to bring you the microphone, just raise your hand and I'll bring it to you.
Well, good morning, everyone. I'm pleased to see that there's so many people here. When they told me I was in this room, I got a little bit nervous about it. I'm really excited for this project. It's something I've been working on for a few months. If you see what's up here, there's a website and there's also a QR code if you want to scan it. Not necessary, but we're going to do a quick poll in just a couple minutes. So Micah just kind of read a little overview about what the project is that I'm doing. And we're going to get more into the details, but the gist is we're testing for Joseph Smith's genetic descendants who were through women other than Emma Smith. I'll give you a quick overview of my presentation. We're going to do a little poll of the room here, and then I'll introduce you to kind of me and my background. We'll meet the family, the Lyon, Fisher, Sessions family, three generations of incredible Mormon women. That is really part of what got me most interested in doing this in the first place was just the fascinating history behind them. I'll explain about how the Genome Project itself is going to work, talk about why it's important, why it matters, what's it going to change, or what I'm hoping it will change. And then for the next phase or the end of the presentation, I want to talk about sexual polyandry as it relates to this topic in particular and this family in particular, and both the LDS Church's position and the position of apologists on this. And then just give a few final thoughts, and then we'll turn it over to questions. Okay, so if everybody wants to go to this, I'll give you a minute to pull it up if you don't already have it. This is one time it's oh, hey, Brant's here. Bangawo. Brant and I both went on missions to Korea, South Korea, so we're just going to talk in Korean the whole time and hope everybody else can understand. Okay, is everybody good? Does it say waiting for poll to start? Okay. All right, now what you should see on your device is you should see a list of questions, and this is going to show the results of your answers that you type in. So don't look up here until you've typed in your question. So put your answer in, and then click vote, and it'll pop up on here. Sorry for the red lettering. It says it beats working up there at the top.
You need to turn the lights down.
Okay.
What's the website?
Who's responsible for the spelling?
Sorry. That would be me.
What was the address?
The website? Give us the address once more.
Okay.
Are there 18
With spelling like that, can we trust what you say?
Yeah. Which one did I misspell?
It might be your sensitive word here.
Yeah, you have to do capital C.
Capital C.
Yeah, it's capital Z, 2D. Yeah, wow.
I'm going to play with it for a sec.
That's probably good. Okay. Hey, look at that spelling. And these, a couple of these are just for fun. Just as a warm up here. How old are you? Okay, we've got a pretty good bell curve there. Like most people are in their 30s to 50s. Yeah, there may be a sampling error here with the people at the bottom of the list, maybe not participating in as high of numbers, but this is not a my disclaimer is, as an attorney, this is not a scientific study. And while we're looking for these results to come up, let me explain the reason why I'm interested in some of these questions, because I'm going to talk in a minute about bias and about everybody's motivations and kind of what we bring to the table just as an introduction to the topic. So I wanted to introduce the idea of people coming here with their own biases. When we look at people in these different columns, we all come with different assumptions about those people. And as those people, whichever column we're in, we have our own bias that we really just can't get over. I'm not sure what I was expecting, but nobody wants to come to Sunstone and say they're a literal believer. That's what we're learning from this one. I should have hidden the results on this one because that's cheating. So the other three names are made up. I don't know. I don't think there was ever a Benjamin F. Beaverton, but I wish there was. So. Now, some of these obviously aren't going to fit everyone's personal views perfectly, but if you can estimate your best approximation as close as possible. It's going to go off the screen here. Okay. It's kind of fun, right? Okay. Is Joseph Smith's practice of polyandry any different morally than polygamy? So trying to isolate there, is there a moral difference between... My wife's trying to tell me I have another spelling mistake. Somebody changed their answer. That's cheating. Okay. So most people think that polyandry was worse. So would this be important to you to know if Joseph Smith fathered any children through a polyandrous relationship? Would that matter? And if you're saying no, there's other presentations down the hall that you can go and see. Okay. So that's our quick poll. That was it. We'll get back to the joy of PowerPoint here in 1 second. There's the donate link at the top. If you get really bored during the presentation, you can just go to that link at the top, and that'll take you where you need to go. If you donate a lot, I'll mail you one of these cool shirts. Okay, I went through this already. So my bias to tell you about where I'm at. I'm, like Micah introduced me, I'm one of the people involved with Infants on Thrones. Who's heard of Infants on Thrones before? Oh, okay, good. That makes me feel a little bit better. The top right picture, that was the post, or that was the picture that the Salt Lake Tribune took in April of General Conference. You can see where the arrow is. That's where I was standing up doing it as well. Micah, who introduced me, he's the guy in the white shirt there in the middle. And then obviously I'm involved with this genome project that I'm telling you about today. So again, just a final thought on bias. It's not definition number two that we're talking about today. It has nothing to do with lawn bowling. This is prejudice against something, usually in a way considered to be unfair. So I don't mean to imply by talking about this up front that we can't have opinions about things, or that we can't have, that we can't be informed, that we can't have our own thoughts. But it's good to just understand that we can't remove that bias, but we, you know, in being mindful about it, that can help us get over it. So that was my introduction. Here's the family that we're going to talk about. This woman, Patty Bartlett Sessions, she is the matron of the family. Very famous book, her diary called Mormon Midwife. Absolutely incredible. Recommended to everyone. She was called Mother Sessions. She was a polyandrous wife of Joseph Smith. We'll get into that in a minute. She was asked by Brigham Young to be in the pilot company coming into Salt Lake City. On the trail, she delivered 9 babies, or on the banks of the Mississippi River. This is a quote from her journal. I had driven my wagon all the way, except for the last 2 mountains, and had walked 1,030 miles. First year in Salt Lake, she delivered 248 children. And you can imagine what kinds of conditions that was in. Over her lifetime, she recorded almost 4,000 deliveries as a midwife. She was extremely frugal, scrimped and saved, kept track of every penny that went in and out, and tracked it all in her journal. It gets a little bit tedious in the journal, but she also lived to 97. She outlived just about everybody else that we're going to be talking about here today, with a couple of exceptions, but she lived to 1892. She outlived her daughter, Sylvia. Sylvia was married to Windsor Lyon, Joseph Smith, Heber C. Kimball, and then later on Ezekiel Clark. She was a daughter of Patty, polyandrous wife of Joseph Smith as well, so this is one of those cases where we have a mother and daughter that were both sealed to Joseph Smith. She married first to Windsor Lyon. He owned a famous drug and variety store in Nauvoo. It's since been restored. You can tour it there. Sylvia, on her deathbed, related to her daughter, Josephine, who we're going to be talking about next, that Josephine was a daughter of Joseph Smith. In other words, she said, Joseph Smith's your father.
So she married her father?
No, it was her daughter.
Josephine. So Josephine,
this woman's daughter
was Joseph Smith's daughter. Yeah, so according to what Sylvia told Josephine, and I'll clear it up for you if there's any confusion. She helped settle Bountiful. She didn't have a diary. We don't really know that much about Sylvia. It's kind of a tragedy, especially with how fastidious her mother was with recording. It's sad. This is a picture of Windsor Lyon. It's not Mr. Darcy from Pride and Prejudice. This is her husband, Windsor. Good-looking guy. And the reason why I'm using pictures here is because we're going to it'll help you correlate the whole family tree later on. So this is Josephine. She's the daughter of Sylvia, granddaughter of Patty. So we're seeing these three generations in order. She was born in Nauvoo. She was a true child of Nauvoo. She was born in the tumultuous months right before Joseph Smith's death on February 8th of 1844. She walked into Salt Lake City around age 10. She'd been living in Iowa with her mother, Sylvia, for a while. People called her the Little Flower Lady. She had an amazing garden in Bountiful. She'd give flowers to people all the time. And in 1915 was when she made her own affidavit that publicly told that account of what her mother had told her in 1882 on her deathbed. There's other historical references to this to this account that are prior to that. So there's some good evidence that it was actually known before then. In fact, Patty Sessions, there's a couple quotes from Patty Sessions talking about it, and there's a quote from a few other people who were aware that she was widely known as Joseph Smith's daughter. So this wasn't a secret, but it didn't actually become public, I would say, until 1915, really. She married a Pony Express rider, John Fisher, absolutely incredible guy as well. Unfortunately, we're not going to have time to get into him. So here's the diagram of what we're talking about here today. On the left, we've got Joseph Smith and Emma. You're probably familiar with them. Their three genetic descendants who lived into adulthood are down here in the lower left corner. What we're going to do with the testing is we're going to test these three groups on the bottom. So I just told you about the three on the bottom left. Josephine's there in the middle. Let's talk about what happened here on the right. So Windsor Lyon, top right corner, married to Sylvia. Windsor in 1846 married a second wife, Suzanne Eliza Gee. They had a son, Charles William Lyon, who he lived to be about 40, and he fathered children as well. There's now living descendants from each of these three people. So what we're doing, well, just for fun, do you see any family resemblance here? So my wife, when I showed this to my wife, she said, those two look like they could be brothers. And in fact, they are. The three over here are Joseph Smith's children of Emma, who lived to adulthood. So Josephine on the right, and potentially her half-brothers on the left. So what we're doing with the testing is we're comparing these three groups. We don't have a picture of Charles, so I had to use his gravestone. That's the best I could do. So of these three groups, each one of them had a different mother. We know that. But two of them shared a father. So we don't know if the two groups in the middle of the left shared a father, or if potentially Josephine and Charles shared Windsor as their father. That's the question. So how does it work? Here's a testing kit. I've got some of them up here. They're these little things. You spit in a vial, send it off to the lab, and in about a month or two, you get back these really cool results. Here's mine, or a portion of mine. So you can see this David Jones fellow I share some of my DNA with. I don't know who he is, but he and I are second or third cousins. And if we went back and looked at our family trees, we could compare them. But this isn't based on any kind of genealogical research. This is based completely on genetic research. It's completely based on the molecules that he and I each submitted to the company that were analyzed. And it's extremely powerful. You can't see it here, but right now I have over 900 matches on 23andMe. They have millions of samples. It's absolutely incredible. The 23andMe is the best in the industry. They're extremely fast. The testing is very, very accurate. This is autosomal testing. What autosomal testing means is basically they're doing the full genome. So we'll get to the prior history of testing for Joseph Smith's descendants in a minute, but there's a big difference between, there's basically three different kinds of testing they can do. Mitochondrial DNA, Y-DNA, and then autosomal testing. Autosomal is by far the broadest. Mitochondrial DNA, you can only test mother to mother to mother to, or mother to child. Okay, so if you tested my mitochondrial DNA, it actually shows my mother's 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 mother, and it's almost identical from generation to generation. In fact, statistically, basically is identical. So I actually have identical mitochondrial DNA with you know, my descendant thousands and thousands of years ago. We'd have the exact same mitochondrial profile. That doesn't help us here because we're testing for the father, not the mother. So that we don't get from Josephine back to Joseph through mitochondria because Joseph didn't give her mitochondria. That always goes from mother to child. The other type of testing, Y-DNA testing, Y being the XY chromosome, only comes from men. So if we're testing father to son to son to son to son to son, we can do paternity testing very easily all the way up, and we can see where that Y line came from. As a family law attorney, I do a lot of paternity testing. And Y-DNA is often what ends up being used for that. But neither of those are going to be helpful to us because we're trying to test for paternity of a female descendant. So we have to use autosomal testing, but that's in recent years it's become a lot more the technology's come a long way in the last 5 years. The website itself has built-in comparison tools. That's what I just showed you a minute ago. So even without hiring a geneticist, as soon as we run these against each other, we can see whether or not the people are going to be related. They might be third cousins, they might be fourth cousins, depending on what generation people we test. The oldest generations are going to be the best signal for us. So those are the people that we want to test. We want to test the oldest people that we can. So why does this matter? For me, this would vindicate Sylvia and Josephine's experience. This is what they believed, this is what they lived, and there's been a lot of people that have discredited it for not very valid reasons, in my opinion. This would be the first non-Emma child of Joseph Smith, which would be a big deal. This would be the first confirmation of sexual polyandry, absolute confirmation. This would be the very first one. I think it would move the conversation forward. It would allow people to not get involved in these petty debates over, well, what kind of relation, you know, was this a component of the relationship or was it not? And I think if we just had a very clear scientific result, it would help that. We can own our own history instead of running from it. We can just embrace it. It is what it is, and we can be proud of it. This will make more sense in a minute, but people can stop wasting their money on DNA studies that don't go anywhere, which is what's happened for the last 15 or 16 years. So what do I need to make this happen? A little bit of saliva from the right people. I think some of them are here today. Any Josephine descendants here? Okay. Got a kit up here with your name on it. When we're done. Hey, you can. I've got $100 bills if we want to really start going down that road. So, no, I'm not kidding though. If anyone who's a Josephine descendant, a Joseph Smith descendant, or a descendant of Charles Windsor Lyon, those are the three groups that we want to compare. So, if you're one of those people, I need your DNA. It's not going to happen without that. And the testing is completely free to people who are donating. Their saliva to be part of this. I'm going to run the labs through 23andMe, and then I download the raw data, and then you're going to get for free. You're going to get your own 23andMe profile and account on there. So that's it's a $100 value. I just need a little bit of money for the testing kits and DNA samples. As of today or last night, we were a little over $4,000. So we're doing great on funding. We've got all the funding that we need at this point. I need to find more people. That's the difficulty. The test results take about a month or two to come back, and then after that, the analysis is relatively easy. Okay, let's go through the brief but sad story of prior testing. This makes me a little depressed. Sorensen Molecular Genetic Foundation started doing testing on Joseph Smith's genetic descendants, who weren't Emma's children, in about 1999. By 2005, the Deseret News reported that for Josephine alone, so not all these other, they tested all these other children too, but not for any of the other children, just for Josephine alone, by 2005, they spent over $100,000 and had collected hundreds of samples. By 2008, they had disconfirmed other children, but there were no published results for Josephine. They promised that within a year, this was in 2008, so by 2009, they promised that they would have results for Josephine ready to go. They had all the samples collected. 2011, still nothing on Josephine. They had an enormous amount of time and money that they spent on it. They continued to report other children who were disconfirmed, and people who were involved with the project were publishing on other topics like Book of Mormon DNA and things like that, but never seen any results for Josephine. By 2012, the Sorensen group got sold out to Ancestry. This is the short version. And Ancestry is also founded by Mormons based in Provo. And now all the samples are gone. They're off limits. Even for genetic research, they've essentially refused to let anybody have access to them. So it's pretty tragic that over a period of more than a decade and all this work is now basically down the tubes. This gentleman, he's not Joseph Smith, it's Dr. Ugo Perrigo. He was the one who was running the project. And I have a lot of respect for Dr. Perrigo. I don't say any of this to disparage him or anything, but this is how things have gone down. After the Sorensen group was sold out to Ancestry, Dr. Perrigo was hired by the LDS Church to become the CES director in Rome. He responded to my emails about the project, but he really wouldn't give me a substantive response as to why there was never any results for Josephine. Why didn't we see them in 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012? Why didn't we see any of these results after they promised they were going to be there? I launched my website in 2014, kind of the soft launch, and that's when I started sending more correspondence to him about it. He's since restarted his effort, but now he won't communicate. He doesn't want to share any data. He doesn't want to work on it together, anything like that. My understanding is that people who are giving their samples to him are not getting access to their data, that they don't get the raw data or their 23andMe account. Essentially, they give their sample, and then they don't get any of that data. That's my understanding. Dr. Perigo has also published regarding Book of Mormon DNA apologetics. Again, we're talking about bias here, so that we all have our own bias. Honestly, I hope his effort is successful. I wish him the best of luck. I think anybody who's giving me a sample, if they want to give one to him too, great. You know, there's no reason not to. The funding on both sides is there. But based on what's happened before, I'm very skeptical that he's ever going to publish any results. I think based on what happened, it's probably fairly likely that he knew what the answer was. He's a professional geneticist and was working on this project for many years. So that's my short version of prior testing. Let's talk about... Sorry, I'm parched. Anybody have any questions on the prior testing?
Why do you think you won't publish it? What's he hiding?
Well, the only... Yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry. Good moderating, Brant. This guy nails it. Give it up for Brant, everybody. Thank you. Yes. So the question was, why do I think he won't publish it? Well, again, I don't know. I wasn't involved with the project. I think there were results there, but I could only speculate as to that. So I think he'd probably have some motivation to not want to do that until it was absolutely necessary. The other thing that's really tragic about this that's happened in the intervening years is some of these people who donated, in fact, my understanding is about 15 of the oldest generation of people who donated these samples are now deceased. And since those results are now locked, or that data is now locked up, that's 15 people of the best data that we had that's now not going to be out there. So that's pretty sad as well, right here.
It's exclusively being done for the family, for purposes of the family and their genealogy.
Okay, so are you saying then that he doesn't intend to publicly release the information?
Well, we have to decide whether we're going to authorize that.
Okay.
Because we retained him as a family to do the job.
Right. And I've heard that the family had retained him to do the analysis. I wasn't aware that there was a possibility that he may never publish the results. And frankly, I would criticize that because this is a public question. This is something that's important to the family, certainly, but this is also something that's important to a lot of other people. Now, if people want to go out and do their own study and do whatever they want with the results, that's totally, you know, people are able to do that. What I'm proposing is that let's solve this and let's put it out there to the public. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, actually, it'll be published and circulated among the family regardless of the results. And I'm sure when that takes place that someone will pick it up and, you know, everyone will know at that point.
I think right behind you, Micah. Oh, sorry.
It seems that Ancestry has everything needed. They've already got the sample.
Oh, yeah. Now,
is there someone who might be interested in doing it?
Suing them would probably be harder than just going out and recollecting the data that we have. Yeah. So, and this will, what I'm going to respond to right now kind of dovetails off that point as well in terms of the testing. Autosomal DNA testing has not been around for a long time. It hasn't been this cheap for a long time. Now it's $100. It used to be more like 1,000. But for a professional geneticist who has autosomal DNA test results for a higher level generation, someone who would be a second or third cousin of a Joseph Smith descendant, this would have been very easy analysis to do. You don't need that many samples, and the technology's been there for a long time. Now, any Joe Blow, you know, attorney who gets a crazy idea and launches a website could do this. It's that easy now. But eight years ago, this was not by any means impossible. And if it was impossible, then, you know, why were they trying to do it? You know, they had the samples that they needed, and they were running them. So,
Cheryl Allen, we've
chatted. Hi, Cheryl. Nice to meet you. Your kit's up here, in case you're wondering.
Pardon?
Your kit's up right up here, in case you're wondering.
Just a couple of corrections. Dr. Borrego did publish, and it's in this book, The Persistence of Polygamy. He did publish based on the technology, the DNA technology, that he had at that time. And he's got a chapter in this book. Number two, the family, when we finish our study, because we actually started the study and we made the request for the study in 1999. That idea came from the family, although Sorensen ran with it. But we know that when we finish that this is, that it will become public information. We just respect these three women so much that we want to handle it in a sensitive way, in respect of the wonderful heritage that they have left us. And I think any family would probably relate with that. But the question that was asked about the legal implications with Ancestry.com, frankly, that's a question that we'd like to pursue. It's just very complicated, because we think those samples that Ancestry.com now has of the deceased people are exceedingly valuable and, frankly, irreplaceable.
Right. Now, Cheryl, I want to clarify one point. You're saying that he did publish, but he didn't publish a result for Josephine's, for who Josephine's father was. Okay.
Based on that technology, well, that's, that she could be.
That she could be, but there's no... Right, but he didn't have a conclusive answer as to who her father was.
Because the technology right. wasn't allowed.
Okay.
So and from his perspective, he thinks it is
true. Yeah. So that's the problem, is it wasn't determined one way or another. That's why he's doing it again. That's why I'm doing it. So if the results had been published previously, then there wouldn't be anything to talk about here. So let's move on to the sexual polyandry issue. The LDS Church is pretty, their position on it's pretty straightforward. They just basically haven't said anything about it. The Gospel Topics essays that talk about polygamy and plural marriage in Nauvoo and Kirtland don't even acknowledge the fact that we know that Joseph Smith certainly had sexual activity in other relationships. They just leave it open as a possibility. There's actually only two references to sex in those essays. And the first one is the possibility, so it's kind of ambivalent. And the second one is dismissive. So here's the first one, where it says, ceilings in the middle. Ceilings for time and eternity included commitments and relationships during this life, generally including the possibility of sexual relations. And here's the second quote, right in the middle, or down towards the bottom. Helen Mark Kimball spoke of her ceiling to Joseph Smith as being for eternity alone. There's some issues with that quote, suggesting that the relationship did not involve sexual relations. Other than that, there's no the LDS Church really has no official reference to this. Brian Hales has done a lot of apologetic work. He's probably, I'd say, the chief apologist on this issue. He was the most cited person in the LDS Gospel Topics essays, and he's written extensively about Sylvia, Josephine, and Patty as well. So for the rest of the presentation, I'm going to kind of show what he argues, how this relationship was structured, and what I think the problems are with that. So here's an overview on his position, and we'll go through each of these points. He does think that Joseph is the biological father, Josephine. So we agree on that. He thinks that the historical evidence strongly supports that. He thinks that obviously there was sex involved, but there was no sexual polyandry. Because by his reasoning, Sylvia wasn't living with Windsor. They were separated. He thinks there was a sort of spiritual divorce and later a remarriage. And in fact, Windsor wasn't even in town. This is his These are all things that he's said. We'll go through that. He thinks that they separated because of Windsor's excommunication, which was in 1842. We'll talk about that. He thinks that Windsor left Nauvoo, basically abandoning Sylvia. The conception of Josephine happened during this separation period, so there's no messy polyandry problem. As a family law attorney, I love these stories because this is what I hear all day long. It's like, it's just, you know, you're kind of trying to trace all these things all over, so maybe that's why I'm gravitating towards this. But he concludes that Sylvia wouldn't have engaged in sexual relations with her husband Windsor because he was not in good standing at that time. Okay. And he uses sources at the time who stated they visited her or visited him, but never anyone who said, I went and saw Mr. Lyon and Mrs. Lyon. He thinks that's somewhat supporting evidence that they were living apart. He also claims that Joseph Smith wouldn't have engaged in sexual polyandry because that would have violated the doctrine. Okay? So we'll go through each of these, and I'll present you my response here. What time is it? We at 9:40?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so I'm going to speed up a little bit. There's two... Let's talk first about the date of sealing between... I know this says position on Josephine, date of sealing. What I meant was the sealing between Sylvia and Joseph. Okay. So the date of sealing between Sylvia and Joseph, it's a little bit uncertain. There's two of these affidavit books. Neither one of them were signed. So we've got two unsigned affidavits. In the law, those would be scrap paper. So an unsigned affidavit's not particularly helpful. But one says February 8th, 1842. The other one says February 8th, 1843. Now, February 8th is an interesting date because Josephine was born on February 8th. So was there somehow an error in transcribing in these affidavit books the February 8th date? So we've got 3 years in a row, February 8th, February 8th, February 8th, where things happen. Now, that could just be a coincidence. Or it could have been an error. We just don't know. Hales' view is that the later date is more persuasive because the later date of sealing is after the excommunication of Windsor. So he thinks that Windsor was excommunicated and then they got sealed after that. This is based on Sylvia's recollection, and this is a partial quote, and I'll show you the rest of the quote in a minute. He says, she then told me, she being her mother, Sylvia, so this is Josephine speaking, she then told me that I was the daughter of the prophet Joseph Smith, she having been sealed to the prophet at the time that her husband, Mr. Lyon, was out of fellowship with the church. So he's using that to show that the sealing was after time of the excommunication. The second date would put the conception into that period, which helps his theory of kind of excommunication equals a spiritual divorce. My position on this... she was conceived. Josephine was conceived in May of 1843, and I'll show you a timeline in a minute. But by that time, Sylvia had already acted as a witness to her mother Patty's sealing for Joseph, and the Patty's sealing was March of 1842. So if it was that February 8th, 1842 date, that would put it within about a month of her mother's sealing. That seems to make sense in terms of proximity to her mother's sealing. It also seems to make sense that if she's witnessing a polyandrous sealing, that clearly shows she's at least a polygamy insider. And this is one of the few pieces on the sealing date issue. This is one of the few pieces of contemporary evidence that we have. So this isn't somebody's later recollection. This isn't somebody later on stating, oh, I think it was around this time. This is based on contemporary evidence that was recorded at the time that Sylvia was there at Patty's sealing. Okay. So here's the full affidavit of what Josephine said. And I've bolded the part that's important here. And this is Sylvia stating her position on when she was sealed. So these are her words. This is when I was sealed to Joseph. She also told me, this is obviously Josephine quoting her, she also told me that she was sealed to the prophet about the same time that Zena D. Huntington and Eliza R. Snow were thus sealed. And there's the dates for those two. Also note what this affidavit doesn't say. Doesn't say anything about a divorce, doesn't say anything about a separation, doesn't say anything about abandonment, doesn't say Windsor left town. It doesn't say any of that. So Sylvia made a direct statement as to the general time frame of the sealing, and it wasn't in 1843. It was 1842 or 1841 even. That first sentence about Windsor being excommunicated, I think, is more relevant to just the general context. And again, this is the only contemporary data that we have. So here's a timeline. There's kind of two clusters. So you can see over here Zena, Patty, and Eliza. We just read what Sylvia said about when the sealing happened. So that, to me, is all good data for showing that the sealing was actually quite a bit earlier. Windsor was later charged with excommunication. The next day, Joseph sought his affidavit on some irregularities with the post office. And then Windsor gets excommunicated in the next week or two after that. Windsor obviously stays in town because he loans Joseph Smith $500 3 months later. And then Eliza R. Snow reports visiting Windsor in Nauvoo with other people, and Josephine's conceived a couple months later. So I think it's pretty easy to show that Windsor actually was there. But let's look at that issue about what Dr. Hales says about this. So he puts this separation immediately after the excommunication, and then he shows that there's a remarriage that later took place. What I've done here is I've actually taken a screenshot of his paper because I want to make sure that this is completely in context. So look at the last sentence here. It says, he being Windsor, this is from Dr. Hales' paper, Windsor subsequently left Nauvoo and went up to Iowa City, making his home there, but leaving his wife in Nauvoo, who apparently did not wish to leave the church and go with him. And this is a, look at the footnote there, 24, it's very important. This is, again, him showing that clearly the note's been noted. So we'll go to the, it's a bit of an inside joke for me. But I'm glad so many people get it. So this is footnote 24. This is the important source that Dr. Hales is using to show that Windsor up and left town. Well, it's a letter from 1945. And the person who wrote it said, concerning the questions you asked about my mother and grandmother, I don't know as much as I really should, but here's kind of what I do know. And then you can see down at the bottom of what I've got here, sometime previous to my mother's birth, Windsor P. Lyon, along with many others, became out of harmony with the prophet and the church leaders. And he left Nauvoo, go to Iowa City, making his home there, but leaving his wife in Nauvoo, who apparently did not wish to leave the church and go with him. Now, it must have been at this time that she was sealed to the prophet, thinking, no doubt, that her husband had apostatized from the church for good. So that's his source that he's using. The problem with that is it's pretty much completely wrong on every detail. That's a family history recollection from much later on. We've got ample support to show that Windsor was there. I just showed you on that timeline all the things showing that Windsor was actually in town. And far from being on bad terms with Joseph Smith, he was loaning him money, he was signing affidavits for him, he was also in the Nauvoo Legion, he was a close friend of Joseph Smith. And Hales knows all this. He's done this research, and all the sources that I'm finding are research. He's put all his research up on the website, so I know what sources he's looked at and annotated himself. I think quite frankly, it's irresponsible for him to claim this. He knows better. Windsor was there. He had a large drug store. We've talked about that. These are some of the things that I showed on that time frame. Here's the quotes to show that Windsor was actually in Nauvoo at the time. Nobody ever recorded him leaving either. There's no contemporary evidence of that whatsoever, which there almost certainly would have been. Here's a picture this is in the history of the church where Joseph Smith sought him on these affidavits about the post office. Crazy stuff that was going on with the post office. We complain about the post office, but nobody's stealing your stamps. So so the other side of this is, if that letter and if Hale's position were correct, where's the scandal around this woman, Sylvia Session Lyon, getting pregnant in 1843 and having a child in 1844? Well, if her husband left town a year and a half, 2 years ago, she just gets pregnant. That would probably be something that people would note, especially around the time of, you know, in Nauvoo around 1843, 1844, all these rumors are swirling. It would have been a huge scandal, and it wasn't. We know that Windsor was actually there the whole time, and so he probably considered Josephine to be his child. Now, Hales acknowledges we're going to move on to the issue of the divorce that he supposes. He acknowledges that there's no evidence there's a legal divorce. But he thinks a divorce did occur practically and religiously, if not also legally. And here's his evidence, and my responses are in red. So first, Hales argues that because Joseph Smith performed the ceremony wedding Josephine to, or excuse me, Sylvia to Windsor, maybe he somehow retained a right to undivorce them later on. Seems rather straightforward, the response to that. Joseph Smith was also the Chief Justice of the Nauvoo Municipal Court, so maybe he thought that he could just divorce them in that role. But Hales acknowledges that that court had no jurisdiction to perform divorces, so that wouldn't have been legal either. And again, there's no evidence to support that this ever happened. Sylvia's statement, Hales argues that Sylvia's statement shows that she thought the marriage to Windsor was invalid on their upon their sealing. I don't see that in that affidavit. Again, it doesn't reference any of that, so I don't see how he's arguing that. But again, he does argue that there was a later remarriage that happened. There's no supporting evidence to show that. That's his supposition. It's based on no historical data at all. He has no source for it. He just thinks that that happened because they continued to live as man and wife after Joseph Smith died and they moved to Iowa together. The idea that she would deny her husband cohabitation would have been very bizarre based on the circumstances of why Windsor was excommunicated. He was excommunicated because the stake president owed him a lot of money. There was a $3,000 debt that wasn't getting paid on, and Windsor sued William Marks. William Marks was the stake president. William Marks instituted an excommunication court against him and excommunicated him. It was not seen as a good thing at the time to... How are we doing on time? 10 minutes? Okay. It was looked down upon greatly at the time to go to a civil court to resolve issues between church members, especially somebody like the stake president. So William Marks was not too happy about being sued. The backstory on that a little bit is Windsor actually didn't sue him directly. He had someone else sue him in his place. So he was sort of, he was trying to be diplomatic about it so that it wasn't, you know, publicly known that he was the one suing him, but Marks was not happy and excommunicated him. Why can't we just admit that this sexual polyandry happened? And again, I wanted to kind of frame this whole thing in the biases that we all have, where we're all coming from. Well, where Dr. Hales is coming from is there's all these early LDS sources that condemn sexual polyandry. There's no doctrinal way for that to be valid, and so he sees it as something that Joseph Smith just absolutely wouldn't have done. This is from the Doctrine and Covenants, section 132, you may have heard of. That was a joke. Man, you guys are slowing down here. Okay, verse 63, but if either one of these 10 virgins, after she's espoused, shall be with another man, she's committed adultery. So that's a pretty clear declaration that sexual polyandry wasn't supposed to happen. This is a screenshot of Hale's website. He goes on about how polyandry was universally condemned. So I don't know how he framed, and this isn't just sexual polyandry, this is all polyandry for most of these quotes. So I don't know how he frames that within knowing that there's, like he does, that there's all these other polyandrous wives as well. But he claims that Joseph Smith wouldn't have done this because it would have just violated the doctrine. It would have violated God's law. The argument, or the issues that I find with that, he's presupposing that Joseph Smith was very, very concerned with, you know, following to the letter this scripture, which wasn't really even publicly known at the time. But here's some other violations of what would have been a problem with the sealing to Sylvia besides the sexual polyandry. She wasn't a virgin. She was already promised to another man. She made a vow to another man. He didn't even ask Emma about this. There's no evidence that he did that. It's almost, you know, like he did with so many of his marriages. There's no evidence to support that he ever did that. And after she was with Joseph, Sylvia went back to Windsor, so that would have made her an adulteress under this very rigid doctrinal interpretation. I don't think it's fair to impose any of that back on Joseph Smith at this point and use that as data for why the sexual polyandry didn't happen or why he didn't think it was polyandrous. So that's my presentation. My final thought is just in honoring the memory of this family. I've really come to be fond of them over the months of research on this. They're absolutely incredible people. The things they went through, I can't even imagine. I wish they were here now to ask them questions, and I find it incredibly fascinating to study their history. But what frustrates me is when people try to use that history, and I'm not necessarily accepting myself from this, but when people try to use that history for motivations that I think do a disservice to the history. So when we say that there was a divorce that wasn't, that there's not evidence for, and when we say that maybe she wasn't actually the biological daughter, maybe that meant some other kind of meaning, why are we doing that? And I think it's a motivated reasoning to try to make it palatable for us in the 21st century who don't have to deal with the messy things that they had to deal with. And I thank everybody for coming. Okay, so we have about 5 minutes, so we'd like to get everyone's questions on recording if you can. So if you can come up to this microphone here, we only have time for about one or two questions. They've been very strict on time.
Joseph Smith was quite the sexual athlete. I'm just wondering why he didn't have more children as active as he was.
Yeah, and that's a great question. That's definitely going to remain a mystery. I think, I'll frame this back with some of the discussion that people have had on that other topic, including Dr. Hales. But birth control, contraception wasn't unknown at the time. They actually did have kind of a primitive form of condoms. People knew about the different cycles and that sort of thing. So it wouldn't have been impossible for him to have used some kind of method of that. There's a lot of speculation, and there's some evidence that there were abortions that were going on in Nauvoo. That could have been possible. There's also other children besides Josephine that we haven't tested yet, that nobody's done testing on, that are potential children. So there's potentially other children out there, but there's not an easy answer for that.
Maybe it's just the immaculate contraception.
Do you have any data yet? Have you tested any? It sounds like you had an idea at the beginning what direction this might go, and so I'm just wondering if you've got any start.
I do have some data. I don't have as much as I want, but yeah, I do have some data on Josephine's line already. The tricky thing with what I'm doing, and maybe I don't know if it was 100% clear, but I'm going for three pools of people. So with Josephine in the middle, she's either going to be more related to the Joseph Smith side, or she's going to be more related to Charles Windsor Lyon. She's going to be half siblings with one of those people. So if I test all three, it's going to light up on each of those two. So getting samples from three pools is obviously more difficult than getting samples from two pools. So there's a lot of data out there that I still need to collect.
Is it starting to point you in that direction yet?
I couldn't give you any. I'm not going to give any kind of conclusion on it until I can actually. No preliminary results at this point. So there's no direction that I can give either way.
Sorry, I'm far away from my.
That's okay. I'll just repeat your question. Go ahead.
I'm directing this towards the family. Is there a consensus view among the family, one way or the other? Some apathy towards, or are people really interested in this?
Well, Cheryl and I have kind of talked about this a little bit, but. And I've talked with several family members on my own that have said, "Oh yeah, we're Team Windsor. You know, it's not quite Edward and Jacob, but it's like we're Team Windsor, and we think that Windsor was the father. And then there's some people that are definitely see the evidence there for Joseph being the father. And then there's some family members who are kind of like, oh, I don't want to have anything to do with this. You know, polygamy, blah blah blah, blah kind of thing." So I think the family's so big too. There's so many Josephine descendants. There's so many of them out there, and they're all over the Bountiful and Salt Lake area, especially. But there's, you know, I've talked to one last week that was in Europe, a Josephine descendant. So they're all over the place. But yeah, go ahead.
There seems to be some pretty substantial implications if we find out this information. So I'm wondering, are all the family members okay with going through this? Or they?
No, they're not. So I've spoke with several that are definitely not interested in finding out the information.
Let me say on the other side of that family issue, there's some of us that believe the truth is the truth, and let's let it fall where it may. Yeah.
And I didn't mean to imply otherwise, because I know that's I've when Cheryl and I spoke, I know that's your. No, that's your position.
I was going to say Josephine had six children that lived that had children. So that's a lot of
Yeah.
And across that spectrum, you will find those that accept Joseph Smith as the father, those that don't, those that want to know the truth, I mean, it just varies.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Ancestry's circles? And is that something that you could use as a...
Yeah, absolutely. So circles being their sort of comparison tool, not necessarily super useful, but with Ancestry, we can download the same raw data. So
they basically reconstruct the DNA of the person if they have enough descendants,
yeah,
because they get different pieces from different people.
Right, yeah. The most important thing here is the raw data that we can use, and there's so many other software options. So I can literally take, just even being a layperson, I can take all this raw data and plug it into software, and the software will do it all out for me. But we are going to be using professional geneticists to do the analysis, not me.
So could you find the Son of God gene for Jesus?
That's a good one.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Oh, I failed to mention one thing that I should have. I had a large donor, not fat, just a donor who wanted to donate a lot, and he said that he will donate dollar for dollar up to $1,500 for all the donations that are made during this presentation and after. So if you donate to it, your donation is going to be doubled up to that level. So. Yeah, this is all going to be on my webpage, MormonGenomeProject.com.